Alright, welcome to the Everyday Board Gaming Podcast. This is Daniel.
And Daniel.
And today we are going to be doing a discussion topic instead of one of our top 8 debates. Today we were deciding that we wanted to talk about some of the most influential games. And not just games that are influential in the gaming scene.
Yeah.
Games that have transcended board gaming as a hobby. And so we're going to be talking about some of those. I have a few classic, a few modern, and some honorable mentions. How did you break yours up? What did you look for this?
It's simple, just stuff that you are having an influence outside of gaming, I guess you could say. So you have games that transcend gaming. You have games that are shown in TVs and movies and stuff like that. And other things that have a connection to, I guess, I don't want to give it away, but stuff outside of gaming and made it plausible, I guess you could say.
Awesome. Yeah, and for this podcast, we also did something a little bit differently. So we asked some viewers at home as well through Facebook. We're going to be going over their stuff here in a bit. And you and I, we haven't discussed what the games that we talked about. So
Nope. There
might be some overlap. We don't actually know. I have mine ranked from least to most, and I just have 3. So I have...
Yeah, I have 3 as well. And mine's, Okay. Again, ranked least to most. But the way I have it is... My third is the one I was talking about. It's kind of a cheat, but not really once I start explaining why I think it's really influential.
Awesome. Very cool. So would you like to get started... excuse me. Would you like to get started on the Facebook posts first?
And we can discuss let me do those. My honorable mention before we start doing the Facebook post, just because it's not really influential outside of gaming yet, but it is influential to gamers in a sense, and it will be outside of gaming, and that's Prospero Hall.
Oh, Prospero Hall. Wow, okay.
Because I'm thinking the reason why I'm saying that is because Prospero Hall has made it where you can go to a mass market store like a Target and a Walmart, and they have really good games there. And you look at something like Horrified or the Choose Your Own Adventure games, and you'd be like, just the layman can look at it and go, oh, that looks interesting because I remember those books. Or, hey, I know the Universal Monsters. Maybe this game could be fun. Instead of like when you used to go to mass market stores and be like, what the heck is that?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it used to be back in the day, up until like, what, 5 years ago, maybe 10?
Yeah,
like if you went to an... game with an intellectual property, it was probably garbage.
Yeah.
Now, I guess on to add on to that, we should talk about like Corey Konezka and Fantasy Flight. Like they
That's
really kind of started that whole
where IPs become really good. And the reason why I didn't go with that is because that was more so for the gamer part of it. Where Prospero Hall, a lot of their games are in Target.
Yeah.
A lot of their games are in, like, Barnes & Nobles and, like, these mass-market big-box stores.
Yep.
Whereas Fantasy Flight, they're getting there. They're in your, like, Barnes & Nobles and your other gaming stores, but you don't really see Outer Rim, say, at Walmart.
That's true.
But you can find Horrified at Target.
That's true, yeah. I would be hard-pressed to show Outer Rim or Imperial Assault or even X-Wing to a family gamer. No, I probably wouldn't.
Yeah, but I have no problem showing them any of the Prospero Hall lines. The Jaws game, I think, does a really good job of the hidden player mechanic, where mm-hmm. one player is playing on their own little game board, a la Fury of Dracula. Really well, really easy for the non-gamer to get into. Horrified is just a much simpler version, I guess you could say, of Pandemic, where you do some stuff, bad things happen, and then it goes to the next person. You do some stuff, bad things happen, you go to the next person.
Right. Yeah, it's very easy to pick up.
Yeah, and it's easier for younger audiences to play that than, say, something like a Pandemic. And the Choose Your Own Adventure, all you need really is a strong reader, and then everybody can make the choices as a group.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
So,
in fact, yep, there it is, that white box right there.
Yeah, I got mine sitting right here on the table.
Yeah, have you been playing more of it lately?
I haven't lately, but I left it here because I know that's probably what we're going to end up playing when we make another online call.
Cool.
Just because it's so simple. It's such a good game.
Yeah.
All the other team needs, you only need one copy of the game, and all the other team needs is a D6.
Right, exactly. So my honorable mention is going to be Monopoly, and I'm guessing you probably thought I was going to put it on my list, and I'll tell you why I didn't. In Monopoly, everybody knows it as the board game. Everybody knows what Monopoly is. It has transcended popular culture because everybody knows what Monopoly is. Here's why I didn't put it as the most influential games, because it is still just a game. And everybody knows it as a board game. And they go, oh, like Monopoly. Oh, like the game. Right. They don't, it hasn't broken into just being a part of our everyday lives, other than it is the board game that everybody knows. You know what I mean? It doesn't do that extra level of transcendence that I think these other three games that I'm going to talk about do. And even though it's an incredibly influential board game, whether you like it or not, it stayed for, it's almost 100 years old now. So, I mean, the fact
Yeah,
that it's,
what, night? No, I think it is 100 years old, because wasn't like the first one by the lady published like in the 1918 or like a.
I it might have been, yeah. Yeah, I know it was near the 20s. Like, Lizzie McGee put it around that time, so it's probably, if it's not a
The
hundred years
Monopoly
yet,
that
it's
we
close.
know is until the 20s, but
Right.
the original
Landlord
version
game,
of it,
right.
yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So it's an important game, and it's really done a lot of things for it, but when we get into our list, you'll see exactly why we think that, or why I think these other three have
Are more
transcended
important.
and more important than that, where really Monopoly, everybody knows it's a board game. So, all right. With that being said, let's talk about some of the Facebook posts that we got from some of the viewers. I'll go ahead and start with the first one. Let's see here. Jumped away there. Sorry about that. Our first one is from a guy named Dustin Hahn. He was kind enough on the Board Game Revolution community board forum on Facebook. He brought up Hasbro games, and he said, as a whole, Hasbro games would be the best examples of that, in my opinion. They're classics that people know growing up, whether you were born in the 50s or the 2000s. It's likely connected to most people's first time playing board games, and even has plenty of options. Plenty of options that branch away from the classics and more into the gaming hobby as well. He went on to more about, you rarely see pop culture until recently, or even references, talk about board games outside of the Hasbro sphere. And he has a really good point. Hasbro is made up of Hasbro as the company, and now it also includes Milton Bradley, Parker Brothers, Avalon Hill, Wizards of the Coast. It has a lot nowadays, but back in the day, it was just Hasbro, and it was also a toy manufacturer, and everybody knew that. They knew that branding. Like, when you heard the term Hasbro, you're like, oh, like the games. Same with, like, Milton Bradley and Parker Brothers. What are your thoughts on this one?
I don't disagree with it. Like you said, because they own Parker Brothers now. I would have put like for the in the past, the most influential would probably be Parker Brothers, just because of Monopoly. But or Milton Bradley for that. Back in the day, those were the three gaming cores right there.
Yeah.
Hasbro, though, I think that had a better business model because they were a toy company that had board games
Right.
rather than Parker Brothers and Milton Bradley were just all about the board games that they put out. But yeah, Hasbro had a lot of IPs. They had a lot of games out there. Especially now, they're still kind of influential. There's a reason why you can't get Darkseid Rising in the States because they own the rights to the board gaming for Star Wars. So it's a very good choice, and I agree. I don't disagree with this pick at all.
Yeah, I agree. Like, when I think of Hasbro myself, I think Avalon Hill. But that really was a board game company that made, like, miniature skirmish games, or not miniatures. It had the little cardboard cutouts, but it was a war tactical games, and then that became, like, their brand of board games, is now Avalon Hill. So I think Risk Legacy, Betrayal at House on the Hill, all of those are under the Avalon Hill license.
Patrol on the House on the Hill is now owned by WizKids, I believe.
Not WizKids, but Avalon Hill. Let me see here. I
No,
might.
the newer copies are WizKids.
Oh, are they? Okay,
Yeah,
that's
I
cool.
think it's WizKids because I remember like you can go online and buy the new sliders instead of the little
Oh, gotcha.
thing, and I think
Yeah.
those are branded WizKids.
That's cool. Yeah, I mean, I know. Well, so WizKids, or Wizards of the Coast, I think you mean,
Yeah. Or is it
is
Wizards Coast? Maybe, I don't know.
yeah, Wizards of the Coast, the makers of Magic: The Gathering, as well, amongst other things,
Wow,
are
there's another thing right there.
right. Exactly. Those are owned by Avalon Hill, which Avalon Hill
And
is the own
the big thing we have to
is owned
say
by
about Hasbro is
Hasbro.
Hasbro was the original Asmodee, where they just bought everything up.
Yeah, that's true. If it was board games, it was. I know Avalon
Or
Hill.
toys for that matter.
Really? I mean, that's true. Yeah, the Toys That Made Us, the wonderful documentary on Netflix. Yeah, that's right. Hasbro really was kind of the behemoth then. I know 3M Bookshelf, the 3M, you know, the makers of the tape, and office supplies. They through the 60s and early 70s, they produced board games, the bookshelf ones. But since Avalon Hill was also doing it, when they were getting out of the board game business, they sold all of their licenses to Avalon Hill, which Avalon Hill reprinted some of those as well. And those are some of the best games ever, honestly.
I know about those 3Ms because you have us hunting them down wherever we go board game shopping.
Yep. I will complete my collection. I think I only have about seven left. We'll see. Yeah. There's some that are incredibly difficult to find. Some that were prototype only. So, do you want to take the next one?
Sure, the next one is given to us by Kenny Colburn off the Board Game Revolution, and he actually has two picks, and I actually agree with both of these. His first one, he states, is Charades, and he says that he thinks it might be the first party game focused on getting people based together for a game, more on laughter rather than points. And that's true. Charades back in the day was a very influential party game, I guess you can say, that got people having fun rather than trying to be the best gamer.
Right.
And he says it's still popular among board gamers today. Its influence can be seen in such popular games as Time Up, Reverse Charades, and others. And his second pick is chess. It might be the strategy of the game that popularized the idea of thinky board games. It has transcended centuries, language, nations, and generations. It's still popular today and respected. And he's not wrong there. This game was made what?
It was about 600 BC,
Yeah,
so.
something like that. So it's been around for quite a long while, and it's still played today at a high level. There's still chess tournaments all the time. There's still big payouts for really good chess players. Heck, every now and then I'll watch a YouTuber that does chess where he has like street chess goes against the really good chess players that are tournament based, and it's a fun little video to watch every now and then.
Are you talking Chris Ramsey?
I think that's what his name is, yeah, where he's got like a 14-year-old master versus a street
Yeah.
chess player.
Yeah.
Yeah, so
I've
I watch
seen
it from
that.
time to time just because I'm like, I can't even think that fast, and these guys are playing in 15 minutes a full game of chess.
Right, exactly. And they destroy each other. Yeah, like going back to charades, I remember when I was younger, before I got into board gaming, I remember hearing the term charades. And then understand that it was acting out and miming while silent. And because I think before charades was a game, they used to just call it miming or acting or whatever. But now, like, if you say the word charades, that talks about the action itself
And the thing is
of
with
acting
charades
silently.
too is it's in popular culture. You see people like in romantic comedies they're playing charades, in TV shows they're playing charades and stuff like that,
Yeah.
especially in the 90s. I remember seeing it a lot growing up as a kid watching TV and stuff like that. They're playing the game, so
Yeah, it's became synonymous. There's a term where certain where a brand will become a public domain term and no longer a copywritten brand because of how well it's used. Like Thermos, I know, is one of them. I think Band-Aid is getting close. Dumpster, like that was a branded term. That like everything else had to be like a waste box or whatever, a disposal bin.
Got a
And
Charmander mug today.
oh, nice Charmander mug, I love it. And I think charades is now is if there was one game that I could say has become public domain because of how well it's used, charades would probably be that.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that at all. just because it's so, like, you see it all the time. Mm-hmm. So it's everywhere, especially, like I said, in the late or early 90s stuff, like the TV shows and the movies and stuff like that.
Yeah. And now going into history a little bit, chess, I do agree with him on that as well. It was the first oldest strategy game, with a couple exceptions, which I'll go into later. Like Go. Go is significantly older than chess. And there's one that's on my list that I'm going to talk about later. But chess really was like the first pure strategy game that works really well. And it really was one of those thinkies that's still played today. Go is not as popular as chess, but
if you think about it, and spoiler alert, we were looking at like topics for like classic board games, and we were looking at the list, and there's older ones, but chess is still very prevalent today. I think Senet was another one that we looked at, and I thought that was a really good game. Royal Game of Ur, I've seen it played. I've never actually played it myself. I watched the video of people playing it.
Uh-huh.
But the thing is, as much as I like Senet, as much as I like Moncala, as much as I like Go and stuff like that, I've never played Go, but I've seen it played, and it looks interesting. Chess is still there.
Yeah.
They still have chess clubs in high school. They still have other these classic games. Don't really have people, unless there's like the niche fandom of it. Whereas chess, everybody knows chess. You see it on Star Trek, where they made 3D chess, the 3-level chess. So it's in popular culture as well, because you see it in The Big Bang Theory, where they're playing the 3D chess. You see it in other TV shows. They've made movies about chess,
right?
A Robin Williams movie was about chess, I believe. Like, was it Robin Williams?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, but they have movies made about it. Searching for Bobby Fischer, a chess player.
Yeah. You know, one thing that I realized, one thing that chess really has an advantage of, is that we found yesterday a list of promotional board games. And I couldn't help but think, I was like, why is Bridge on this? Why is this like that? And it's like one games that you can slap a branding on and play. So you have Bridge, you have Poker, Cribbage, whatever. And then, but chess sets, you can throw any theme on it and have two teams battling against each other. You can't do that with Go.
You get Mario Chess, you get that with Lord of the Rings.
Yep.
Those really nice chess sets where you pay for a piece at a time.
Right. And like games like Mahjong and Senet and chess, like Mahjong, Senet, Moncala, Go, you can't really add a branding to those.
No, you can't.
No, but chess, it makes perfect sense. So that's probably one of the reasons why it's so ingrained into our culture.
And why you can buy anything. Like, I like chess, I enjoy chess, but if I were to get a chess set, it'd probably be like a Harry Potter chess set, just because it's in Harry Potter. Wizard's chess, but it's basically chess with moving pieces.
Yeah, definitely.
So,
The other comment that we had was from Chad Leonard. He said two games as well. He said Mahjong, which was the first suited set collection game. It is now ingrained in multiple cultures, spurred international trade, and sold out radios in America during the Roaring Twenties. Wow, it really outsold radios in the 20s. I didn't know that. That's interesting. The game started infighting about house rules, although the precursor to card games the precursor to card games. But yeah, no, he's right. Mahjong is basically like four decks of cards combined together with some extra stuff, and it's played. The standard game of Mahjong is made, is played like Gin Rummy, like a card game, trick taking game. It's actually really fun. However, like every computer had a copy of Mahjong, as it was called, which was just the solitaire. You get pairs of games, and everybody learned it from there, and that really did transcend it. Well, that's true. I mean, not everybody, I suppose. But
that was actually the first time I was ever introduced to Mahjong, was the game on my computer, and it reminds me, when I was watching just recently That 70s Show, and he went to the movies with his mom, and they're like, Mahjong? What the hell is Mahjong? That was my thought when I first saw it. I'm like, what the heck is this Mahjong thing?
Yeah, Yeah, exactly. And I don't blame you on that. Mahjong, I actually really enjoy on its own. It's a really fun game. So much to the point, one of our mutual friends, Lorenzo, I taught him how to play it once, and we played by the actual, or more or less, they were like basic rules. We weren't playing with scoring, but we played it once because I got a nicer Mahjong set, and I'm like, all right, guys, let's actually try this. I want to get this off my shelf of shame. And so I learned how to play it, taught them all, and we played it. And he, after that one game, he went and bought a Mahjong set, which are not cheap.
Oh, they are not.
There's a decent one will set you back, you know, 50 to 100 bucks easy.
Yeah.
But he sawed it. He really did, to the point where one of the sets that we found, it was a used set, and we're like, we're not gonna buy it unless otherwise. And it was
And he was
missing
missing one
one
pin.
tile. Yeah, a poor guy. And it was a
It was a
gorgeous set.
really gorgeous set.
Yeah, oh man, it was absolutely stunning. But yeah, that's nearly 150, 200 tiles or something that he lit
And
sifted through.
they're not cheap tiles. They're think dominoes, but better quality.
Yeah. Which, you know, a lot of these games like Mahjong and cards and tarot cards, which we'll talk about in a minute, and dominoes, they all stemmed from the same source. Like they're all kind of part of the same family. Whereas like in the Eastern cultures, it changed and evolved into Mahjong sets. A lot of places were primarily domino tiles, and then in Europe it changed to cards and evolved into that, and then in I forget what kind of they're also cards in Africa, but they're like discs and they look
Yeah.
really neat, but they're basically playing cards. So all of these evolved from domino tiles essentially,
Yeah.
not the modern game of domino, but they all evolved from that. But then also, if you've ever seen in Asian cultures the fortune telling sticks that you shake those out and they have inscriptions on those actually evolved from domino tiles as well and Mahjong tiles. So that's interesting. One became like a story and one became a game.
Yeah.
So, which goes into his second part of the post, tarot. The cards that led to the modern deck of 52. Without tarot, there would be no World Series of Poker. Without the Oracle side of the tarot deck, art in early games may have been totally different. He's absolutely right. Tarot was earlier than cards. They all stemmed from that same family and branched
Yeah.
out. But yeah, it really was the precursor. And even though, so technically tarot cards aren't a game, I'm glad he still brought that up because that's what it became. It became a lot of
Yeah,
games.
in the game, yeah.
And I've seen games that have evolved from the idea of tarot cards. So I have one over here where it's called like the Quest deck or something like that. And
Okay.
it basically takes the idea of a tarot cards and turns it into like a story game.
Yeah, and then tarot itself, like I said, has transcended. I mean, you see it a lot of times when someone's getting a tarot reading, they're getting cards read to them by a psychic or a Romani or whatever. But one thing I just popped in my mind is because I've been playing this game. It's called Persona 5. I'm playing the Royal version, and it's in the regular Persona 5 too. And most, if I'm not correct, all the Persona games is they have the tarot cards or your confidants. So they're, I mean, it's even in video games.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's yeah, it's easily transcended. I mean, with the one exception is that technically tarot is not a game, but
It's
that's
not a
fine.
game, yeah.
But it's
But
evolved into
it's,
so many
yeah.
games. So, awesome.
And then, of course, tarot sized cards are just amazing in games.
That's true.
Actually, shuffle them with these fat hands.
The games like Seven Wonders, those have tarot sized cards and
There's another one
oh wait,
where it's.
do they?
Seven Wonders Duels had the smaller ones. I don't know if Seven Wonders have tarot
Oh
sized
no,
cards,
there
but.
was one. Dixit, I know, is tarot size, if
Yeah,
not bigger.
Dixit, Mysterium, Obscurial, all their cards are tarot sized.
Yeah. So that's an awesome topic to think about too, is how the size of the cards have changed just because of tarot. Like
Yeah.
it's just intriguing, yeah, because you could actually say, "Oh, do you want to sell tarot size cards?" Yeah, sure. So, yeah. Did you want to get started on our list, our top three of most influential games?
Yes, and a lot of people are going to say that I say this game a lot, but I picked Gloomhaven as an influential game outside of gaming. but not in the sense for gamers per se. And you can throw Kingdom Death Monster or something like in this. Why I'm saying these are influential is because of what they've done for Kickstarter.
Okay.
These games have made where it shows, I mean, you've seen it with some like CMON games and stuff like that, but Gloomhaven and Kingdom Death Monsters are the ones that threw everything in the box and say, here's the game.
Okay.
You get everything. There's no goals, there's none of this. You just get everything in the kitchen sink in this box and we go. And I think Gloomhaven and Kingdom Death Monsters really did that, or Kingdom Death Monster, whichever one you want to do, did that really well and showed that Kickstarter could be a force for gamers to basically pre-order, I guess you could say. But it also shows for like Gloomhaven, it's a one-man band. He creates the game. He has some guest host. He does all the production, all the artwork. It's all him. It's Civil Fair Games. Just that's it. Him and his wife. They're the ones that run it. And Gloomhaven shows that these smaller companies can use Kickstarter very smartly and make a gangbusters amount of money. And
right.
It shows that Kickstarter is a good place for these smaller companies, as well if they're fighting with bigger companies. Yeah, now. But I think Gloomhaven and CMON and Kingdom Death Monster showed a lot of board gaming companies that Kickstarter is a reliable source of income to help them get their board games out there. And that's why I chose Gloomhaven, because it's one I've actually played. But Kingdom Death Monster is like top three of all time or something like that of funding. So, and Gloomhaven's right up there. And Frosthaven, their expansion or their second game in the Gloomhaven lore, is just, last time I checked, it was at $7 million.
Yeah, I just checked it right now while you were talking. Without you even saying anything, last night I was actually researching the most funded board games on Kickstarter. And so Kingdom Death Monster had, I think, $12.3 million. Second was Exploding Kittens, which was like $8 million. And because Gloomhaven was like number 8 on the list or something to that effect.
Yeah, their first edition wasn't their second printing.
$4 million, right. Yeah. But now it's $7.5 million, and it still has half a month to go.
And the thing is, your biggest, with Kickstarter, if you do it a lot, notice the trend, is the first 2 days tend to be some of the best days for pledges, and the last 2 days because of the FOMO, fear of missing out on it.
Yeah.
And so I think it could easily reach $10 million once it gets to the last 2-3 days before it funds.
Right, exactly. I remember...
Especially with a lot of people getting their income tax and or stimulus checks coming in.
That's true. That's very true. Yeah, they have a good chance of backing it. I know I was telling my wife about it. I was like, wow, look how impressive this Kickstarter is going right now. And she was like, no, you can't back it. I'm like, no, it wasn't my intention. I have Gloomhaven. I don't play it enough. She was like, then why are you telling me this? I'm like, no, because I want to show you what it's talking about. Because I find that really fascinating, you know?
Yeah,
And it's impressive on what it's planning on doing.
And like I said, Gloomhaven, Kingdom Death Monster, CBON Games, whichever one you want to do, has shown that Kickstarter is a good, reliable place to put your games and help you get funded. Because not only are you funding the game, like, say, a Frosthaven, a Gloomhaven, a Kingdom Death Monster, or in CMON's cases, which is the one that just hit Ankh. Not only are you funding these, but you're giving them enough resources to help build their other games that they put out there, like your Potion Explosions, like your Gizmos and stuff like that. It's giving them a slush fund, I guess you can say. And so that's why I think Gloomhaven is very influential because of what it's done for Kickstarter.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's a really good pick, Daniel. Honestly, that's really good. So my first pick, or my third in line, is Magic the Gathering. And
see, I knew this was going to be on your list.
Yeah, I mean...
play it enough for me to put it on the list, but I do believe, or have played it enough, I think I've only played it twice, but it is a very influential game, and I agree with this.
Absolutely. No, there are times where I still want to play it. Like, it's weird. Like, everybody tells me it's like if you start smoking... Like, you'll like 10 years after you quit, you're still going to have, like, urges to...
Yeah.
The cravings, yeah. I'm still kind of... I played Magic the Gathering 20 years ago. I can actually say that because I know I started in 1999 and 2000. And I played it, and I was tournament level for a while, local tournaments, getting second place. Never got first, but I got second fairly often. And I still have like 10,000 cards, and I adore the game. But what sets this apart and what really makes me think that this is so influential on culture, first, it created the idea of collectible games. It really did. This was the first. Now, there were games before it that yeah, had collectible card games.
But yeah, this is the one that really blew up, I guess you could say.
And it's still in that model.
1994?
1994, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and
it's still going strong today. It's
still going strong. 26 years.
26 years, yeah. 26 years. 25 year last year. That's crazy.
Yeah, exactly. And so, and it's still going strong, and it's still as collectible as always, and there's still a market for it, which is phenomenal, and it's still a pretty solid game. But I remember, so I used to do Magic, as in sleight of hand, stage illusions, etc. And I remember telling people, it's like, oh, so what do you like to do for fun? Oh, I do Magic. And they're like, wait, the card game or Hocus Pocus? And that tells you right there that it's like, wait, when they have to ask for clarification, when you do Magic as a hobby, wait, are you talking the card game or are you talking something like pick a card, you know? And that to me transcends a new level, because now most people, whether they play games or not, you could probably tell, or you could probably say, oh, we do Magic. And then they would actually know Magic, the Gathering. Magic
is, this is how influential it is. Anytime someone says it's like Magic, but Danny's just like, no.
Yep, no, I'm out. I already have Magic. Why would I want to play this game?
Exactly. But that, I don't disagree, and you can look at it that it's got its fingerprints in the Pokemon card game, in the Yu-Gi-Oh card game, in the Star Wars collectible card game. Hell, even Fantasy Flight LCGs owe their life to Magic the Gathering. When you've got Arkham Horror LCG, you got the Marvel Champions, I think it's what it's called, which is the LCG, the Lord of the Rings LCG. All this is because of Magic. Magic showed a collectible card game is viable if you know what you're doing and put a smart plan. There's a reason why it's still alive, where a lot of these other collectible card games are gone. The X-Men one, the Star Wars one,
the Looney Tunes one.
There was one just recently, I remember, like, Cujo or Kajado or...
Oh, Kaijudo, yeah.
Kaijudo, yeah. That were like, they went all in on the first wave of it, and then it just died. You're like, what happened to that game? I never played it, but I just remember the marketing for it. Mm-hmm. They were having game stores push it. The one we go to often, the one that you teach games at, they were pushing it too, just because the way they were trying to market it, and it didn't take off. But you still have people that play Magic the Gathering on a constant basis.
Right. Yeah, exactly. That was a huge thing.
My only thing is, with Magic the Gathering, it's got its good where it transcends, but it's also got its bad. That's where you get a lot of the toxic gaming tropes coming from, and a lot of it has to do with Magic the Gathering.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't think yes, part of it comes from the culture, but also part of it is from just the competitive nature of it. And the same is with chess. I mean, if you get into a really in-depth chess community and you play chess against a grandmaster, well, you're going to lose, and they're going to tell you, they're like, no, the only way you can learn is to learn by trial. Yes, and that's not true.
At least with like chess and stuff like that, yeah, you're going to have some horrible people, but they're willing to say, hey, you're going to lose, but this is where you need to learn and where you need to work. Where Magic is, no, some of the most toxic, hardcore gamers that if you're not part of the Magic group, they're not happy if you're trying to come in.
Right, exactly. Yep. And they're not, because they want all the good cards too for themselves. It's kind of greedy, but there's always exceptions to the rules. So
because I've gotten really friendly with the staff of where you work. I don't know if you want to mention it. But
yeah, Zia Comics.
Zia Comics here in our location. I don't want to mention right now. But if you find out Zia Comics, yeah, but with them, it's just some of the Magic players can be really toxic in the sense that some were stealing from other Magic players, and it's just...
Yeah, I heard about that happening from time to time, and it's a shame.
It's not just
but that's,
Zia. I've heard it happening at, like, when we had Hastings, when we had that other gaming store at the mall.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's bad for the... I remember there was one guy who, back in the day, I opened up a couple packs when I was, like, a teenager. And I opened up a few packs, and he was like, oh, that's a nice card. I'll trade you a few of these rares for it. And I was like, well, what? And I found out later that it was, like, a $20 card. And he was trading me, like, dollar rares and whatnot. And even, like, the owner of the shop, like, kind of told me, was like, that wasn't a good trade for you. And I was like, well, I needed these rares anyway from one of my decks, so it was fine.
Yeah.
At the time, but yeah, I mean, I might have told myself that to feel better about it. So
yeah,
I mean, that's true where it is. Thankfully, if chess was collectible, oh my goodness,
right?
You know,
yeah.
A whole new level of terrible. But so that was my number three, Magic the Gathering. I think it transcends gaming quite well.
So my number two that I picked on here is
number three.
Well, my number three was Gloomhaven.
Oh, that's right. That's right. It's been so long ago.
My number two is, it goes by Catan now, but back then it was known as Settlers of Catan. I think this is influential both in the gaming and outside the gaming world because Catan itself was the, I guess you could say, the grandfather, the modern rise of board gaming when you're getting away from like your Hasbros, your Risks, your Monopolies, your other games over there. And this one, and the reason why I picked this one, because it in pop culture, this game is still talked about. It was in Board Gaming, Big Bang Theory. There was an article about 5 years ago about how the Green Bay Packers offensive line would get together and play Catan, and it would get almost violent because no one wanted to trade sheep for wood.
Oh, that's awesome.
It made me giggle because it's like, these are professional players and they get together to play board gaming, and especially for the modern board gaming world, to get that kind of press in the news, especially back then, because this was carried like by NBC and CBS and stuff like that, people talking about Real Sports did a whole freaking 15-minute segment on it, the HBO 60-minute sports chat show. They did a whole 15-minute panel on it about how these guys get together and play Catan. And it's like, and then you got like wood for sheep. You hear it every so often. And when I was watching it, and people were saying wood for sheep or something like that on TV, I had nothing to clue about it. Then I play Catan. I'm like, hey, I get that reference now. And
right.
That's when I had the Captain America moment in the Avengers where he's like, I know that reference. I know what it means now.
Right. Like, I've heard it. I know what it is. Yeah, that's...
And like I said, it's basically the modern Monopoly. It's what everybody knows now. Everybody knows Monopoly, everybody knows Catan, just because it's in the pop culture. People talk about it.
Right. Did you know that Catan and Magic the Gathering... Yeah, Catan and Magic the Gathering are the same age.
Really?
Yeah, they're both 94.
94 was a big year.
94 was a big year, yeah. Exactly. No, you have a good point. That was the first, and it's become, it went in Germany before it came to the United States, but when it came to the United States, I think it had a slow build, because definitely everybody heard Magic the Gathering, and not until recently have people heard of Catan comparatively, of course. Now, we live in a bubble, so we don't really know, but, Catan is now the third highest selling board game of all time. Not including stuff like chess, because there's no way to track that.
Yeah.
It's third highest selling most selling board game in the world. And it's a $50 game.
So Monopoly's probably number one.
Monopoly's number one.
Risk number two?
Nope.
Hmm.
No, Scrabble is number two.
Yeah, okay, that was gonna be one of the word games I just didn't think of what it was.
Yep, it was Scrabble. Yeah, you'd think like Life or something, but yeah. Scrabble is number two. Catan is now number three.
Well, not surprising yet. Yeah. I mean, I'm not a huge fan of Catan. I'll play it. I actually want to try like the Star Trek Catan because the power's in there.
Yeah.
And I just enjoy sci-fi and Star Trek in general. But I just think Catan is a very influential game because of what it's done and the fact that it's transcended gaming and made it into pop culture. I mean, even in the sports world, it was talked about.
Right. And then even going back into, like, pop culture games, like, I own Game of Thrones Catan. Yeah. I still haven't played it yet, but, like, I know, like, part of it is you have a wall that you're helping maintain against the wildlings, you know? So it's like, well, how cool is that?
Like I said, you have Star Trek Catan. There's mm-hmm. a branding there that, that was another thing I forgot to mention on my honorable mentions is tabletop. It was played on tabletop
yep.
and Star Trek Catan where they were using the powers, and that's what made me want to get into playing that one because it just looks so much fun compared to regular Catan.
Yeah, definitely. I couldn't agree more. All right. Yeah, my number two is checkers or draughts, as it's also called in most
drafts.
Places. Drafts. Yeah, I guess it would be drafts. Drafts. Yeah. That's my second most influential, and not just because it's an ancient board game. I really thought about a lot of different games, but checkers is pretty much one of the first, if not the first, that wasn't a roll and move. And so,
and then, along the lines too, it's the classic game outside of chess that everybody still kind of plays today and knows because you can teach yeah. it to kids. It's a real simple game for them to learn.
Yep. Yeah, and it's pure strategy. Like, it may be a little broken, but, I mean, it really is. There's no random to it. You play either move a piece diagonally or jump pieces. That's it. Once they get to the other end of the board, you can start moving them back. They're kinged. And so much where king me, that's a term that's now used in pop culture. And not only that, like, if you think about almost any modern abstract strategy game, you have a choice of either comparing it to chess or checkers. And I want to... Or Go. I should actually clarify that as well. So Go is another example of that. But I think checkers has the moving a piece tactically or by strategy does beat out chess because of the fact that it's also like 2,000 years older than chess, believe it or not. It's one of the oldest games of all time. And everybody knows checkers. Everybody knows how to play it, or at least the basic concept.
Heck, you can go to Cracker Barrel and they have that big giant chess set for you to play while you're waiting to go get food.
Yeah, exactly. You can buy the giant checkers boards, like big checkers. Checkers were used in pieces on other games. Almost any strategy game where you're moving pieces has an influence from that.
Yeah.
And not just moving pieces after you've rolled dice and moved them.
Heck, and we just mentioned it, chess. Uses the same size board, basically.
Yep.
They just changed the color palette, really.
Yeah, well, they kept the color palette. It doesn't matter.
No, most checkers nowadays is red and black, whereas chess is black and white.
That's true, yeah. But, I mean, light and dark, it can be played vice versa. When you buy, like, the classic packs, you get chess and checkers. Ooh, good deal, you know.
Yeah.
They only had to print one board that way. Yeah, exactly. But no, I think checkers is my pick as far as the classic games go. That has transcended everything. Everybody knows checkers. And you probably could pick it up by just watching it alone.
So I had another game picked out for my number one.
Mm-hmm.
I have it written down, but I'm actually going to change that right now because it just popped in my head. All of a sudden, this one I think is more influential, but I do want to mention the one I had written down is dominoes.
Dominoes?
Yeah, I may not look it, but I come from Hispanic culture. My father is Mexican. So I just remember them playing bones growing up.
Yeah.
And dominoes was a big thing, but that's actually not my number one anymore. But I think dominoes needs to be mentioned because it, especially when you come from a Hispanic background like I do, dominoes is huge in the Latin mm-hmm. community. Huge, and there's different variations. You got Mexican train, you have there's a couple others I can't think off the top of my head just because I remember the train one because that's what my dad played all the time when he played it. So
yeah, definitely.
But the one I'm actually going with here that I curveball is Dungeons and Dragons.
Okay.
And the reason why it just popped in my head when we were talking about Gloomhaven, I'm like, no, this needs to be mentioned because of the influence that it came in. It came out, what, in the 70s, I want to say?
Yep.
And from the 70s on, you still know Dungeons and Dragons. It's in pop culture like you wouldn't believe, and as was Dominoes as well. But you have shows like Stranger Things where they're playing Dungeons and Dragons, and all their bad mm-hmm. things that are going on in the show are named after Dungeons and Dragons monsters. You have I guess you could say a really hot celebrity who plays Dungeons and Dragons is really making it famous in Joe Mantello, whatever his last name is.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people like the way he looks, and he is not a bad looking guy. And he has his whole basement for Dungeons and Dragons, and he puts it out there. I keep mentioning this show just because we were just recently watching it, Big Bang Theory. They play Dungeons and Dragons a lot, but it's not just Big Bang Theory. You just can go through a plethora of popular culture, and Dungeons and Dragons is in there, and they're playing games. And why I think it's funny is that in the late 70s or mid 70s to like the mid 80s, churches were against yeah. Dungeons and Dragons.
Yep.
Were demonic. It's like, when you got the church going against you, it transcends board yeah. gaming or tabletop gaming in this case. And a lot of board gaming has to take their influence from Dungeons and Dragons. They made that fantasy lore viable, really. Yeah. You had your Dark Towers and stuff like that, but I think those came after Dungeons and Dragons.
Absolutely.
If I remember correctly.
Yep.
Hero Quest and stuff like that. And it's because they made it viable. Now, people are like, oh my God, I'm getting tired of that generic fantasy. Because I'm tired of that Dungeons and Dragons skinning of it. And it's because yeah. they showed how viable it was. So through the 80s and the 90s and the early 2000s, especially in the explosion of the modern board gaming community, fantasy blew up. You had your role players, you had your Lords of Waterdeep, you had your other board games that are based off of Dungeons and Dragons.
But right.
You also had cartoons based off Dungeons and Dragons. You've had movies based off Dungeons and Dragons. They're not great, but
yeah, but they're right, like licensed games. Ones. They're...
A lot of video games that you play nowadays are because of Dungeons and Dragons. The fantasy, generic lore, your Diablos, your
yeah.
What is that one? It's like a point and click game. I can't think of it. Dragon's Den or something like that. It's a really
oh,
cool
yeah, yeah.
game. Yeah, so you have that thanks to Dungeons and Dragons. So to me, this is why I was like, Domino's, as important as it is for the classic games, when I thought Dungeons and Dragons, I was like, no, this has to be mentioned because it transcends gaming in general.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, everything, like if you see a die that is not a standard six-sided die, then it's Dungeons and Dragons. That's what made it. Polyhedral
and,
dice.
And not just that, it started the RPG world, too. So
yeah.
your cyberpunks, your Star Wars RPG, any tabletop RPG whatsoever owes their life to Dungeons and Dragons because
absolutely.
It just got so popular.
Yeah, definitely. It you are absolutely, you hit the nail in the coffin with that. Absolutely. Because have you seen the new Disney movie or Pixar movie came out?
Yes,
Onward.
Onward. I actually
yeah.
bought it when it came out because I'm like, I really want to see it because, again, generic fantasy, Dungeons and Dragons is thanks to that, and they actually, the game in Onward that he plays is actually turning into a real RPG.
Yeah, something of yore. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or the Quest of Yore. Yeah, that's so awesome. I finally got to see it the other day, and I haven't heard anything about it. Like, I don't tend to actively seek promotional material about Pixar movies. But when they're like, oh yeah, Onward, it's the newest Pixar movie, I'm like, okay, that's generic. And then I had
yeah.
no idea what it was about, and then I watched the first, like, 5 minutes, and I see, like, the D&D brother who's like, oh yeah, it's the Quest of Yore, you don't understand, Staff of Power. And I'm listening, is this really? Like, and then, oh, I was hooked. I like that movie a lot now. It was so good.
I really enjoyed that movie. And it's funny because I was telling my wife, it's very predictable, but that's, again, most kids' movies are.
Sure.
But it's like, to me, because I know gaming, it actually hit me in a better spot than some of their other Pixar movies. Don't get me wrong.
Oh, yeah.
I'm a huge fan of Pixar movies. And when they say, hey, a Pixar movie's coming out, I'm going to go watch it. Unfortunately,
yep.
because what they had to do with Onward, they had to release it on Disney Plus or release it early to buy. Because of
yep.
the coronavirus, everything that's been going on. So
right.
we were like, okay, fine, I'll just buy it, check it out. And it was like, I couldn't sleep. It was 11, 12 o'clock at night. And sometimes I get insomnia. So I'm like, I'll just put this on. And I just was like, oh my God, that was such a good movie.
Yeah, it was fantastic. So I'm not going to lie. My number one is Dungeons & Dragons as well. It really is. Everything you said was just spot on. It is the one game that has entirely other genres to thank for it. I mean, sure, like a lot of it was based off of J.R.R. Tolkien and Lord of the Rings and whatnot. But
they got it from there, don't get me wrong, but for gaming purposes and then transcending into outside of gaming, I mean, if you look at most early video gamers that created video games back in the day, they're like, oh, that's because we played Dungeons & Dragons a lot growing up.
Yep, exactly.
And you wanted to get that epic scope of Dungeons & Dragons at a video game.
Yeah, exactly. So therefore, you played like half of any video games that are available. So, yeah, it's, oh my god, yeah, Dungeons & Dragons, hands down, most influential game, definitely a modern culture, and I think it's going to be that way for many hundreds of years, personally.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, honestly, I think Dungeons & Dragons is going to be that evergreen that stays, kind of like chess, I guess you could say. Just because, and even if Dungeons & Dragons doesn't stay, if they stop making like the books and stuff like that,
yeah,
it's going to be in popular culture all the way through. I mean, if you think about it, it's the 70s was what, 50 years ago?
Yep.
And so that's half a century when it came out almost. And so, and it's still very prevalent today. In fact, it's got a resurgence because of things like Stranger Things and talking about it in popular culture, talking about it. But it never died down either. It got like where it lulled for a little bit, but it never, people still constantly played it. You have high schoolers who play it all the time still.
Yep.
I never really played Dungeons & Dragons. I'm not a huge tabletop RPG player. I prefer seeing the visual on the board rather than trying to think it in my head. You know what I mean?
Sure, yeah. I mean, I didn't play it until I was an adult either. Whereas, I mean, even Magic the Gathering, that's what I played when I was a teenager. And that, of course, is a throwback to Dungeons & Dragons.
Oh, yeah.
It's the same thing.
But like I said, originally I wanted to say Dominoes, but once I was talking about Gloomhaven and fantasy and stuff like that, I'm like, well, you know what? I had to put Dungeons and Dragons because,
yeah,
as much as Dominoes is in pop culture, and big, especially growing up in the way I did, it's really big in the Latin community. It's really big in the African American community and in the inner city community and stuff like that. It just doesn't have that transcendence that, say, Dungeons and Dragons has.
Yeah. Definitely. Cool. Well, I think this was definitely a good discussion. I don't know what we're going to be doing next week. We're going to be hanging around here probably for a few minutes, and we'll be talking about next week, next Wednesday, for our discussion topic, and we'll be posting that online soon. Other than that, this has been Everyday Board Gaming, and we appreciate you for tuning in. As always, I am Daniel.
I am Daniel.
And thanks for tuning in.
Bye.